By Courier, by O. Henry. It was neither the season nor the hour when the park had frequenters, and it's likely that the young lady, who was seated on one of the benches at the side of the walk, had merely obeyed a sudden impulse to sit for a while and enjoy a foretaste of coming spring. She rested there, pensive and still. A certain melancholy that touched her countenance must have been of recent birth, for it had not yet altered the fine and youthful contours of her cheek, nor subdued the arch, though resolute, curve of her lips. A tall young man came striding through the park along the path near which she sat. Behind him tagged a boy carrying a suitcase. At sight of the young lady, the man's face changed to red and back to pale again. He watched her countenance as he drew near, with hope and anxiety mingled on his own. He passed within a few yards of her, but he saw no evidence that she was aware of his presence or existence. Some 50 yards further on, he suddenly stopped and sat on a bench at one side. The boy dropped the suitcase and stared at him with wondering, shrewd eyes. The young man took out his handkerchief and wiped his brow. It was a good handkerchief, a good brow, and the young man was good to look at. He said to the boy, "I want you to take a message to that young lady on that bench. Tell her I'm on my way to the station to leave for San Francisco, where I shall join that Alaska moose-hunting expedition. Tell her that, since she has commanded me to neither speak nor write to her, I take this means of making one last appeal to her sense of justice, for the sake of what has been. Tell her that to condemn and discard one who has not deserved such treatment, without giving him her reasons or a chance to explain, is contrary to her nature, as I believe it to be. Tell her that I have thus, to a certain degree, disobeyed her injunctions, in the hope that she may yet be inclined to see justice done. Go and tell her that." The young man dropped a $0.50 into the boy's hand. The boy looked at him for a moment with bright, canny eyes out of a dirty, intelligent face, and then set off at a run. He approached the lady on the bench a little doubtfully, but unembarrassed. He touched the brim of his old plaid bicycle cap perched on the back of his head. The lady looked at him coolly, without prejudice or favor. "Lady," he said, "that gent on the other bench sent your song and dance by me. If you don't know the guy and he's trying to do the Johnny Act, say the word. I'll call the cops in 3 minutes. If you does know him and he's on the square, well, I'll spill you a bunch of hot air he sent." The young lady betrayed a faint interest. "A song and dance," she said, in a deliberate, sweet voice that seemed to clothe her words in a diaphanous garment of impalpable irony. "A new idea in the troubadour line, I suppose. I used to know the gentleman who sent you, so I think it will be hardly necessary to call the police. You may execute your song and dance, but do not sing too loudly. It's a little early for open-air vaudeville, and we might attract attention." "Ah," said the boy with a shrug down the length of him, "you know what I mean, lady. 'Tain't a turn, it's wind. He told me to tell you he got his collar and cuff in that grip for a scoot clean out to Frisco. Denny's going to shoot snowbirds into Klondike. Says he told you not to send him round no more pink notes or come hanging over the garden gate, and he takes this means of putting you wise. He says you refereed him out like a has-been and never gave him no chance to kick at the decision. He says you swiped him and never said why." The slightly awakened interest in the young lady's eyes did not abate. Perhaps it was caused by either the originality or the audacity of the snowbird hunter in thus circumventing her express commands against the ordinary modes of communication. She fixed her eye on a statue standing disconsolate in the disheveled park, and spoke into the transmitter. "Tell that gentleman that I need not repeat to him a description of my ideals. He knows what they have been and what they still are. So far as they touch on this case, absolute loyalty and truth are the ones paramount. Tell him that I've studied my own heart as well as one can, and I know its weaknesses as well as I do its needs. That is why I decline to hear his pleas, whatever they may be. I did not condemn him through hearsay or doubtful evidence, and that is why I made no charge. But since he persists in hearing what he already well knows, you may convey the matter. Tell him that I entered the conservatory that evening to cut a rose for my mother. Tell him I saw him and Miss Ashburton beneath the pink oleander. The tableau was pretty, but the pose and juxtaposition were too eloquent and evident to require explanation. I left the conservatory, and at the same time the rose and my ideal. You may carry that song and dance to your impresario." I'm shy on one word, lady. Put me wise on that, will you? Juxtaposition, or you may call it propinquity, or, if you like, being rather too near from one maintaining the position of an ideal. The gravel spun from beneath the boy's feet. He stood by the other bench. The man's eyes interrogated him hungrily. The boy's were shining with the impersonal zeal of the translator. "The lady says that she's onto the fact that gals is dead easy when a feller comes spieling ghost stories and trying to make up, and that's why she won't listen to no soft soap. She says she caught your dead to rights hugging a bunch of calico in a hothouse. She sidestepped in to pull some posies, and you was squeezing the other gal to beat the band. She says it looked cute all right and right, but it made her sick. She says you better get busy and make a sneak for the train." The young man gave a low whistle, and his eyes flashed with a sudden thought. His hand flew to the inside pocket of his coat and drew out a handful of letters. Selecting one, he handed it to the boy, following it with a silver dollar from his vest pocket. "Give that letter to the lady," he said, "and ask her to read it. Tell her that it should explain the situation. Tell her that, if she had mixed a little trust with her conception of the ideal, much heartache might have been avoided. Tell her that the loyalty she prizes so much has never wavered. Tell her I'm waiting for an answer." The messenger stood before the lady. "De gent says he has de ski bunk put on him without no cause. He says he's no bum guy, and lady, you read that letter? I bet you he's a white sport, all right." The young lady unfolded the letter somewhat doubtfully and read it. "Dear Dr. Arnold, I want to thank you for your most kind and opportune aid to my daughter last Friday evening, when she was overcome by an attack of her old heart trouble in the conservatory at Mrs. Waldron's reception. Had you been not near to catch her as she fell, and to render proper attention, we might have lost her. I would be glad if you would call and undertake the treatment of her case. Gratefully yours, Robert Ashburton." The young lady refolded the letter and handed it to the boy. "De gent wants an answer," said the messenger. "What's the word?" The lady's eyes suddenly flashed on him, bright and smiling and wet. "Tell that guy on the other bench," she said with a happy, tremulous laugh, "that his girl wants him."